I'm going to do something a little different this morning, sort of inspired by something I've been working on in the office and a trip that I just took. So the trip, Brittany, Carter, and I, we went to the mountains for Carter's birthday, you know, with the pandemic, all that stuff. We couldn't do like a normal birthday party. Carter loves his birthday parties. He usually, at the end of his party every year, already plans out what the theme of his party for the next year is going to be. Last year was a long time ago. Lots happened since then. It was supposed to be Star Wars this year, but that got postponed to next year. But he said he wanted to see snow. So we went to Boone, to the mountains. And apparently we saw some snow, and we apparently brought some back with us. So you're welcome. I love the mountains. It's one of my favorite places to go. They're beautiful, especially with the snow on the ground. I'd never been when there was snow on the ground in the mountains. I'm just not a big fan of driving through the mountains, or more directly, driving up the mountains, because I'm a little bit afraid of heights. And the youth group would attest to that. They have seen the crippling anxiety that gives me driving the church van through the mountains on our way to CIY, because there's a whole lot of this and a lot of this and a lot of this and this at the same time, and it just tears my nerves up. So we went snow tubing on our trip, which is really, really fun. If you've never done that before, you should. It's a lot of fun. They make their own snow, so it's not really weather dependent. But to do that, unfortunately, you have to go like all the way up to the top of the mountain. I guess for it to be cold enough that the fake snow doesn't disappear. I don't know. So that was an issue. And we don't have like the most powerful vehicle in the world. We've got a Hyundai Elantra, not known for its speed or power. And I was so scared going up the mountain, because it was like all the worst things about mountain roads were true about this road. Like, you couldn't see where it went over the hill. You couldn't see around the corner. There were no guardrails, which is insane to me. But I barely had the car going fast enough to get it up the mountain. And then it was really, really bad. When we came back down, Brittany had to drive. I don't know if there's a support group for husbands who have to have their wives drive through the mountains, but I need to join one. So I told her, I was like, look, you drive down. I'll bury my face in my phone. I'll tell us where to go, make sure we get back to the hotel. And we got down the mountain about five times as fast as I got us up the mountain. And that's not all because of gravity. So I was really scared, but we got down there. Overall, it was a great trip. You know, we got home safely. And in the office recently, I've been working on a mountain retreat for our high school and college students. Last year, we went to the beach for a beach retreat because CIY got canceled. And we don't really know what CIY is going to look like this year. And I asked them, do you want to do our own thing or do you want to try CIY? And they said, let's do our own thing. And the consensus of the council of high school and college students said that we were going to the mountains this year. Yay. Because we get the church van. And there's enough of them that I'm probably going to have to pull the trailer behind it, and it's going to be magical. Just hug and kiss your kids really, really good before we leave. So I'm developing some sort of daily devotions that they can do, some on their own, and then as a sort of group discussion along with that. So I've been working on that, and so that kind of inspired today's sermon, as well as my trip. So what we're talking about this morning is how the Bible is full of what we're going to call mountaintop moments. A lot of really, really big, important stuff in the Bible happens on top of mountains or at the foot of mountains or partway up a mountain. If I were going to go through all of those this morning, you'd be very upset with me, because the lunch plans that you made because of me preaching would be ruined, because it would take a really long time. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at a few of the big ones this morning, and we're going to see what these mountaintop moments tell us about God and how he relates to us, and what we can learn from it. And this is going to be more of a broad strokes survey of a bunch of different things, instead of just a specific passage of study. So it's going to be a little different. It'll be less philosophical, I guess, very informative. But I think we're going to have fun. I had a lot of fun writing it. And there should be something for everyone. We're going to go through five of these mountaintop moments, and we'll see some life lessons that we can learn from each of them. So you need to pay attention. We got a lot of ground to cover. So take notes if you want. But luckily for you, this is all recorded on Facebook, so you can go back and watch it as many times as you want. So our first one we're talking about is Mount Ararat. Does anyone of the 12 of you in this room know what happened on Mount Ararat? It's where Noah's Ark came to rest. That's exactly right. Of course, since then, you've had the issue of people wondering, oh, can we find parts of Noah's Ark? Is there any of it left? Blah, blah, blah. It's made of wood. Probably not left 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years later. It's gone. But Mount Ararat is where Noah's Ark came to rest. And what's important about this is where we see the fulfillment of God's promise to Noah. You know, this is where he sees the rainbow and he knows that God does keep his promises and he does look after those who are faithful to him. Because if you remember, the whole world had gone to pot, as my grandmother would say, it was rough. And so God, he sends the flood, water coming from the top, water coming from the bottom, it's water's everywhere. But he saves Noah because Noah and his family were faithful. And the whole earth is flooded. And here is where Noah's promise from God kind of reaches fulfillment, where he made it safely through the flood. He's on the mountain. This is where he sees the bird and the rainbow and everything. So God, what Noah learns is God does keep his promises and he looks after those who are faithful to him. Now look, this is not the same thing as some sort of prosperity gospel that you'll see on TV or that you'll read on a book that you find at Barnes & Noble. God's not going to make you rich necessarily. I should cover my bases here because he might, I don't know. And he's not going to necessarily make you impervious to every bad thing that can happen because you're faithful. You're not going to be immune to the coronavirus because you're faithful. What it is, though, is the promise that God will be with us through even the darkest times in the world. And even if the world is crumbling around you, God offers you safety and redemption. Now, for Moses, that safety and redemption was this little patch of land on top of Mount Ararat. And that meant an end to the flood and the beginning of a new life. For us, it's eternal life in Jesus. God keeps his promises. He promised Noah that he would never again destroy the earth through a flood, and he hasn't. Though with all the rain we've had recently, you would be forgiven if you were wondering if that was still the case. So God keeps his promises, and he looks after those who are faithful. That's Mount Ararat. That's the first, probably what I would call the first of our mountaintop moments in the Bible. But it is far from the last. Our second one, now this is a big one, and this might be the most well-known one, Mount Sinai. What happened on Mount Sinai? Moses met God, he got the Ten Commandments. Big stuff happened here. Now, this is where Moses used the Ten Commandments. That's the first part I want to key on, but it's a little bit bigger than that. So God has certain expectations of his people. Now, thankfully, he doesn't expect us to be perfect, because however close some of you may be, maybe closer than me, you're not. But he does expect us, and he does want us to live a certain way. At Mount Sinai, he gave his people for the first time, outside of Adam and Eve in the garden, he gave his people sort of the basic parameters that they're supposed to live their life by. Now, today, we have something even better. We have God's complete word, which is not something they had. God doesn't hold us to some impossibly high standard without telling us what the standard is. Here within the Bible, we see that Jesus is the standard we are to aspire to. We see the principles we are to live by throughout the entire New Testament. God provides all the framework we need to live our lives the way we were made to. That's what the Israelites got here on Mount Sinai. Now, yes, they squandered it, and before Moses even got off the mountain, they were already kind of ruining it. But that's what happens. God provides the framework for our lives. Now, this is the second and the potentially more important thing that we get, was that Moses was in the very presence of God on this mountain. God was dwelling in the same place as Moses, and Moses at one point even looked upon his back. And this is the kicker for us. As amazing as that is, and we can't even imagine, you know, my God, Moses, he saw God. What we have is something that's far greater. God's Spirit, as a Christian, God's Spirit dwells in you, dwells in us. In that manner, his presence is with us all the time. And this is something, if you think about it, that the ancient Israelites could not have even dreamed of. And yet we have it. And if you're honest about it, you probably take it for granted. I know I do sometimes. Mount Sinai was huge. This was God interacting with his people again. It was him helping them establish the framework of their new lives and sort of starting over after being slaves in Egypt and going through the wilderness. This was like a new starting point for Israel, for God's people. And we have that same privilege today and so much more. God still provides for us, and Jesus is preparing a place for us to dwell permanently in his presence for all eternity. And that will be the mountaintop moment to end all mountaintop moments. So God allows us into his presence, and he provides the framework for our lives. That's what we kind of learn from Mount Sinai. So we looked at a really big mountaintop moment early in Moses' life. Now we're going to look at one sort of the end of his life. This one happens on Mount Nebo. This one is a little bit up for debate where this actual location is. But Mount Nebo is where Moses goes up on the mountain. And the mountain is directly opposite Jericho. So you have, even today, you can see a beautiful view of where Jericho is. Up there, God shows him all the lands that Israel will take, the promised land. Now, is Moses allowed to go in there? No. He is not. But he gets up here to this mountain and God says, look, I'm going to show you all of the land that you've been working toward, that you've been leading your people to all these years. Here it is. And Moses sees it. And right after this, it says Moses died. And then Joshua would come and take over and lead Israel thereafter. So it's a good start. Like, oh, Moses gets up on the mountain. He sees all the promised land, but kind of a morbid ending because then he like literally just dies. But there's a huge lesson for us here, I think. Moses got to see that the work that he worked on for so much of his life, so much of the stuff he did, was not in vain. Now, even though he messed up, he made mistakes, and God punished him for it by not letting him go in, he got to see what he was working towards. But the real payoff wasn't until after he was gone, was it? Because, yes, he saw the promised land, but he didn't get to enter. And Israel didn't enter until after he was dead. And I think that's the way it is with us sometimes. We do the work that God has set before us. We plant seeds in people's lives, and we try to introduce Christ to them, and we try to lead them to Jesus. We plant those seeds. We don't always get to see them sprout and grow. Because maybe those people that we had that relationship, they kind of move on in their lives, and we move in a different direction. We just don't see them anymore. Or sometimes that relationship just ends for one thing or another. You don't always see the seed sprout and grow, but that doesn't mean that what you are doing isn't making a difference. Our real reward is not something we will see in this lifetime. Now, this reminds me of a line from one of my favorite movies. This movie was made back in about, I think, 2000, which is before some of you were born. It's called Gladiator. Anybody ever seen Gladiator? It's a really, really good movie. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. It's really good. Stars Russell Crowe. And I don't know if this is a saying from like a real life person. I looked into it. I didn't see it where it was a quote from anybody. So if it is, I'm sure somebody will let us know in the comments, and I'll be properly educated later when I read them. But there's this line that Russell Crowe's character says multiple times throughout the movie. He says, "What we do in life echoes in eternity." What we do in life echoes in eternity. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Now look, for the Romans, their idea of eternity was very, very different than our concept of eternity. But I still think there's an important truth there that if we have to do the good work that God puts before us, and we're sharing the gospel and we're showing his love to people, we may not see any immediate payoff in this earthly journey. You may be the one planting the seed, but somebody else is the one that's meant to come behind you and water it. We all have different jobs. We have different roles in leading people to Christ. That's basically what happened to Moses. He worked literally his entire life, getting his people out of Egypt. He did some of the most amazing things that we ever see in the Old Testament. All the things that he did, leading them out of Egypt across the Red Sea and leading them through the wilderness. But he didn't get to see what he was working towards the entire time. Someone else took up his work and they finished it. And that's what we need to understand. That's what you need to understand. That's what I need to understand sometimes. The work that you are called to do is important. It takes a lifetime, and it lasts far beyond that. What you do here is not for an earthly reward. Your real reward is in heaven later, just like Moses' was. Moses came to understand that our life doesn't always have an immediate payoff. It's later, and we have to understand that as well. So your life, your life's work, you may not see the payoff for it. That's what we learn from Mount Nebo and the death of Moses. Now this next one, this is like my favorite Bible story in the entire Old Testament. Probably if you throw in the New Testament, that too. I love this story. This is the mountaintop moment on Mount Carmel. And it's not spelled the same way as the candy. It's missing an A. And that's caramel anyway, not caramel. This is my favorite Bible story. This is in 1 Kings 18. This is a story of Elijah and his showdown with prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. Now this story, look, this is actually the trial Sunday that I had to get the job to work here. I taught from this story twice that day. And Chris is nodding her head back there. She remembers it, which is good because that was a long time ago. So this is clearly a good one, or it was good enough for me to get this job at the very least. This story, I think this story has something for everybody. There's water, there's fire, there's animal sacrifice, there's dancing, something for everybody. Great story. So this is where Elijah, he's up on the mountain. Israel as a nation has kind of fallen into rampant idol worship. They're dealing with Baal and Asherah. And God sends Elijah to fix it. So Elijah has this big showdown with the prophets of Baal on the mountaintop. And I do prophets in air quotes because it's hard to be a prophet of a God that doesn't actually exist. But there was a bunch of them. So they go up on Mount Carmel. Literally the entire nation of Israel is watching. And they do these amazing things. You know, the prophets of Baal try to do the sacrifice, and nothing happens because their God doesn't exist, so he can't light fires and do things like that because he's made up. And then Elijah does his thing. God does his thing. The entire nation of Israel turns back to God, at least for a while, because that's sort of the vicious cycle of the Old Testament. You're faithful, and then you're not, and then God punishes you, and then you come back around again. So Elijah doing what he did, speaking and showing his faith on this mountain, this sort of turned the entire tide of an entire nation. Now, can anyone see a parallel with Israel and where we are presently? Now, we can probably identify with the feeling of a country being torn apart. The idols may look different. As I drive around Greenville, I don't really see any gigantic gold cow statues. But you can see idol worship nowadays still. We replace the golden cows with maybe money, famous people, political ideals, sports, our jobs, anything. The idols look different, but the idol worship is still there. And just like Elijah, through our faith, if we act upon it with courage, we can change the course of a nation and of a world. We just have to spend less time bowing at the foot of idols and spend more time bowing in prayer. Now, but it can't stop there. The prayer of a righteous man is powerful and effective, but that's not all we can do. It's not all we should do. We have to be active in our faith. Now, what does being active in our faith mean? I'm just going to keep on rolling. I don't know what that noise was. Does it mean just, you know, coming to church and that being it? What does that mean? I'll tell you what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean just posting on Facebook about what you think is right, what you think is wrong, and whether or not you think what somebody else posted was right or wrong. That's not what it means. Being active in our faith means getting out and serving the needs of those around you in the community, even if you disagree with them, maybe even especially if you disagree with them. Now, as in general, I think there in a lot of places in the world, the church does not do a very good job of this. Now, that's not me saying that everyone here is awful, everybody watching is awful, and that no one is acting on their faith, but sometimes we have a hard time, like, oh, this person, they disagree with me, they don't see things the way I see them, and they're never going to change, so they're not worth my time. But that's not the case. they're worth God's time, that means they're worth your time. We can all do better. By now, we've gotten used to the whole social distancing thing, right? Everybody in your family kind of 6 feet apart. You know, you wear your mask. Some places even have stickers on the floor, the little feet or whatever. We've gotten used to the social distancing thing in our lives in general. And that's a relatively, over the course of history, it's a relatively recent thing. It's a new thing. We've only been doing it for about a year, really. But I think for a long time, Christians have been keeping their faith socially distant from the rest of the world. Maybe it's out of fear of rejection, or maybe it's because we don't want to be uncomfortable. I know when I was younger, I got baptized, and I knew, like, all right, cool, I'm supposed to talk to people about Jesus. I can do this. And then when I tried to do it, I realized, okay, wait, no, I don't want to. I can't. This is scary. Because I was scared. My biggest fear, honestly, was that somebody would ask me a question about the Bible that I didn't know the answer to, and that I would feel stupid. And I hate feeling stupid, which is ironic because you'd think I'd be used to it by now. But I was always scared of being asked a question I didn't have the answer to. And like, oh, well, they think I don't know anything, and they're going to think that everybody's like this and that everybody in the church is clueless. But so maybe you're scared of rejection, or maybe you don't want to feel uncomfortable. But the fact of the matter is, keeping a faith should be active, should be loving, should be compassionate. And that's what we're keeping from our communities if we're not active in our faith. And keeping your faith away from these people is how we got in this mess in the first place. Could Elijah have just walked away and be like, well, yeah, I believe in God. Nobody else does. Well, that sounds like a personal problem to me. He could have, I guess, but he didn't. And he changed the course of an entire nation. He brought God's people back to God all in an instant, all in one mountaintop moment. It wasn't too late for Israel, and it's not too late for this world either. This world just needs you, and it needs me to be Elijah and stand on the mountaintop and profess your faith with action, with compassion, with love, and maybe most importantly, with humility. Because if you read the account there in 1 Kings 18, Elijah's not like, all right, cool, well, you guys tried your thing, now roll up my sleeves, let me show you what I'm going to do. No, when he was there, what'd he do? All right, let me show you what my God's going to do. And that's what we have to do as we go out into our community and we try to meet the physical and the emotional and the spiritual needs of people. We have to say, look, this is not me doing this. This is God doing this. He's just using me. That's what this world needs, and that's what we are called to do. We just have to do it. So we're to our final mountaintop moment. This one's Mount Olivet. Anybody know what Mount Olivet is? Another name for it is the Mount of Olives. This is a big one. In the New Testament, this is one of the bigger ones. At the foot of the Mount of Olives is the Garden of Gethsemane. Everybody knows what that was. Jesus was there and he was prayed. This is also in Acts chapter 1 where Jesus ascended into heaven from. It doesn't specifically say that in the account, but if you look right after that, it says the disciples left from the Mount of Olives and blah, blah, blah. So Jesus went back into heaven from the Mount of Olives. This, for us as Christians, this is where we get our purpose. This is where we get our command to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. A bigger mountaintop doesn't really exist for us. This is also where we get the promise that Jesus is with us always, no matter what. He says, to the very end of the age. That should fill us with the hope and the courage we need to make the disciples that we're called to do. Now look, it's easy if you look out in the world right now to get hopeless. It's easy to fall into despair because it's bad out there. You have people getting sick. People on opposite sides of the political spectrums are tearing each other apart. Just all sorts of stuff happening in the world. It would be easy to fall into despair and to be depressed about what's happening. But as Christians, we're supposed to have this hope. No matter how hopeless the world may seem, our hope will always be found in Jesus Christ. That's what we get from the Mount of Olives. That's the thing that we have to be secure in. That's the message from this mountaintop. That's the ultimate message, if you look at it, from the entire Bible. We have the never-ending love of God. He is always with us, no matter what we do, no matter what happens, we have a job to do. You can't really separate those things. I think Jesus said both of them at the same time for a reason. He said, go and make disciples of all nations, but also I am with you. Those two things are together for a purpose. He's with you, yes, because he needs to be for you to do the job that you have to do. So I encourage you this morning to remember that. Learn from the stories of these mountaintop moments and embrace your own opportunities for these moments if and when they show up in your life, because the world out there needs God's people to be active, to be involved, and to take the opportunities that are given them to make a difference. So that's why I encourage you, that's what I challenge you to do this morning. When you are presented with the mountaintop, don't be as anxious about it as I am driving up them. Be confident and be secure in the hope and the strength that God gives you, and proclaim your faith with love and with humility.